The following program is for entertainment and basic informational purposes only. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, WPRV Radio, its management, or staff. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Don Soa. With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Soa.
And we welcome you to the Money Talk program, everybody. My name is Don Soa. Delighted to have you sharing your drive time home with me. It is Tuesday. That means it is Get Back to Basics Money Talk. And that means included here in studio with me is my daughter and partner, Donna Soa Allard. Welcome, Donna.
Hi, glad to be here.
You know, the things that we talk about on the Get Back to Basics show are exactly that. They're intended to be fundamental things. And somebody was telling me the other day who has recently had an opportunity to listen to the Tuesday program, and they said that what impressed them most about it was that he. And he was talking about a friend of his also who listened to was in the car with him. He said, "What it does is, if you're listening to programs on these kinds of topics, presented in a very simplistic, almost conversational manner, it's the sort of thing you can take home and talk about with your own family over the kitchen table."
Well, sometimes, you know, talking about money and plans for the future can be a daunting topic to bring up, right? Where as a society, we tend to be very personal about our finances, money. We don't really talk about money in the open very often. I don't really know how much my friends make or how much they've saved. But, you know, it's something that, you know, you get better at it the more you talk about it with your partner, certainly. And if you have a family, you know, having some open conversations about certain elements of your finances can be a really, really healthy thing.
Well, it's funny, this one particular gentleman that I was thinking about, he was saying that he actually was at the cafeteria in his office at his work. He says, and at the table next to them, a couple of their friends, one of whom is retiring now, apparently, this summer, said that he was a little bit baffled, I guess is the phrase, but a little frustrated too, that suddenly there's this whole rash of decisions that the HR department are asking him to make, and it's all stuff that are, as he put it, are not things that I know anything about. They're not things that I talk about, that the people around me talk about. These are not the kind of questions. Even at home, he says he has adult children. He says, and they come by for a Sunday barbecue, and even the adult children, who he says are more college educated and more math savvy than he is, computer savvy than he is, even they don't talk about these things. He says, so how am I supposed to fill out the paperwork?
Well, you know, and lots of times people will then go to HR who gave them the paperwork, but HR is not in a position to offer advice. They can give you technical answers about things, but they can't make any recommendations to you. You can't say to them, well, what would you do? That would be wrong for them to actually advise you. So, thankfully for us, you know, that gives us a job, I suppose, right? I mean, that's part of our job is advising people on these kinds of decisions about planning. But we're lucky enough to have the radio show here to offer a resource to our listeners so that, you know, you can formulate questions, as you always say, and, you know, give you some things to think about and talk about.
Well, I can remember several months ago, you and our your brother, Dan, put together articles for our company's newsletter. And one of the topics in there was interesting topic, and they said, what to do with your 401k when you retire? Mm. And it was a fairly generic type question, but it dealt with the choices that the typical employee has related to their 401k when they are actually deciding to leave the company. What are the rules? What are the options? What are the pitfalls? What are the good things that can come out of it? But understanding that there is good, bad, and unfortunate decisions that can be made whenever you're talking about money that is so important to your retirement.
Yeah, and it's really important to remember that whatever the guy who sits next to you or your brother or your sister did may not be the right answer for you. So it's really important to understand how the decisions that you make affect your entire financial situation and what your options are.
Well, see, this popped into my head because of the question that this gentleman was asking. He said that his friend at the next table said, look, we have a 401k plan here. He said, and I can choose how to take the money. Do I take it in the form of an annuity payout, he says, which I have no idea what that really is. He says, or do I take it as a cash distribution, or do I take it as some sort of a lump sum rollover? And I said, you know, there was like three or four of these different kinds of options, and I'm sort of looking at my reflection in the window and saying, I'm not even remotely prepared to answer any of these questions. So I guess for our purposes, since there have actually been a number of studies that were done by financial services organizations that talk about how the average individual, especially baby boomers now, with such a large part of my generation, is already in the retirement planning or existing execution process. In other words, we're doing it now. Mm-hmm. So these are decisions we have to make. So I said, I'm not sure there's too many questions that we get asked here on the Money Talk program that are more important or timely than how do you handle your 401k plan?
Yeah, and fairly universal because, you know, over the last 20 years, 25 years, as we've really seen a shift from defined benefit plans into defined contribution plans, there's just more and more people who have to make this decision.
Donna, for the purposes of this discussion, since I was sort of rehashing in my head the way the gentleman asked the question, he said, I could take it as an annuity payout. Why don't you explain, since that is one of the choices that almost every one of those plans typically has, you know, quite a few of them, what does an annuity payout mean?
So what you can do with your 401k is buy an annuity with it. And when you annuitize a lump sum of money, there is a calculation that takes into consideration your age and the amount of money that you have saved and turns it into a stream of income for you. So it takes part of the decision-making process away from you because you don't have to decide how much to take out. You're essentially buying an insurance product that tells you how much you can take out each month, and you pay taxes on it, but it is a stream of income that will last for either a certain period of time or a lifetime, depending on which payout decision you make. But you essentially create a pension for yourself. So if you had a defined benefit plan through an employer, that would be a pension, and they would offer you a payout for the rest of your life. You can create one with a lump sum of money. Now, some 401ks offer this as an option, some do not. However, if yours does not offer it, and this seems like the right thing for you, you can always go buy one independently through a rollover. So there's always an option to do this, but it's the idea of instead of controlling the cash flow out of your account, you're turning it over to an insurance company, and based on your age and the amount, they determine a stream of cash flow for you for your lifetime.
Now, within your company, if they are in fact offering you that payout option with perhaps a survivor benefit and all that other stuff, then they are affiliated with or working with an insurance company who's going to accept the lump sum that you have there, and you're waiving your right to receive the lump sum, and you are exchanging it instead for a commitment to pay you a monthly check for the rest of your life.
And for some people, that's the right decision, and for others, it's not. So.
Now, the good news I found with a number of the ones that I've seen was that one of the options that many of them do have is that the ability to annuitize part of the lump sum and take the other part of the lump sum as a rollover into an IRA rollover
account. Yep, we see this very often with the TIA CREF plans, right? We see a lot of our teachers and education workers come in, and they have the TIAA CREF plan. And so part of that is investment, and then another part of that is already in an annuity. And so that's a very commonly see that, where you'll annuitize part of it and take a lump sum rollover of part of it.
So that the TIAA side of it, which is paying out about a 3% fixed account, as while it's now a deferred annuity, you can annuitize it, create what we call an immediate annuity, and that changes it over from whatever the accumulated value of the TIAA side was, and you again take that lump sum, hand it back to TIAA, which is an insurance company, one of the largest in the world, and they will offer you a lifetime payout instead of giving you a lump sum. Mm-hmm. Now, the CREF side is usually mutual funds already, which could simply be rolled over into your IRA rollover account. Or for those of you who are simply not of that mindset, you could also annuitize that money too. The insurance company at TIA would be happy to do that for you. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the other options. And the first thing I'm going to say is which of these choices that many companies have is absolutely the worst choice that a prospective retiree can make. We'll be right back with more Money Talk, Get Back to Basics with Donna Allard and myself. I'm Don Sowa. We'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
All right, we're back with the Money Talk program. We're talking about one of the choices or one of the decisions that a great many retiring individuals with companies who have 401k plans, many of the plans will have a series or a selection of choices as to how you can take the money out. Now, you've got to keep something in mind. If you leave a company, and of course, this may have something someone once told me has a lot to do with the size of the company. If you have a very, very large corporation that you work for, then quite frankly, they don't care if you leave the money in the 401k plan or not. They're not worried about it. It's usually the 401ks are very, very large. They're managing hundreds of millions of dollars in some cases or more. Smaller mid-sized companies, they recognize on the risk management side that they are carrying some risk by holding the assets that represent your 401k plan proceeds. So at some, in many cases, some of them actually have rules that state that within a certain period of time, they would like you to move the money out of the 401k.
Yeah, for smaller plans, they don't have the benefit of the economies of scale that come with the very large ones. So large ones, if you have a smaller balance in it, they might not care so much about it. But if it's a smaller plan and you have a bunch of tiny accounts, that can be expensive. So for amounts under $5,000,
The company is the plan. They are the plan administrator, so they have the responsibility for those. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I also wanted to interject. You're specifically talking about 401ks and the option of doing your lump sum rollover, or if you want to get an annuity and take an annuitized distribution that way. The same often applies to regular pensions. Very often, and especially over the last several years, we've seen companies offering a lump sum payout as opposed to holding the money and then paying out the pension payments as a stream of income in retirement. We've seen that happen a lot where companies are looking to get rid of the liability of the pension. And so they'll offer a lump sum distribution. And for some people, it's the right decision, and for some people, it's not. So I just want to make sure that our listeners understand that what we're talking about with the 401k in this case also applies to your traditional defined benefit plans.
Now, if you are separating service from a company, you're no longer going to be there, your plan technically takes on the status of what they sometimes call a frozen plan.
Inactive. Can't contribute to it.
Is it frozen? It's still there. It's still invested, but you're not. No new money's being added either by you or by the company as a match. Now, again, at that particular point in time, one of the options you do have is, of course, to take a cash withdrawal. It is an option. I'm not really sure it should be even offered anymore, but it is, in my opinion, the worst option you could take. Now, Donna, why would anyone really, unless they absolutely did not have a choice, why would they?
What you're talking about is taking the money out and spending it, and that's a terrible choice because you're going to pay taxes on the whole thing. Any money that you distribute from a qualified plan goes on your tax return that year as income, so you get a 1099 for it. Now, we see it very often with small accounts. We see people say, I have a $20,000 401k. I'm just going to spend it. I'm just going to take the distribution. Well, $20,000 goes on your tax return for that year. That doesn't have a huge impact for some people. For others, it does. If you're taking it out and it's a very large amount, it has obviously a much bigger impact. We rarely see people do this with very, very large amounts. If they do it, it's usually because they're in a very dire financial situation or they got very bad advice. They filled out the paperwork wrong.
Long before I ever became this financial guru that I am today, the first job I ever had back when I was actually in college when I had it, They did, in fact, have a profit-sharing plan, which is something that is, as a standalone, is kind of rare nowadays, but many companies will still have
usually
a,
it's adjacent to another plan.
A component as part like a safe harbor component to bigger plans. But in those days, that meant the company, based on their consultation with their tax professional, too, at the end of each year, would determine if some money could be put aside and reduce the broad-based tax liability to the small family corporation in this case. But when I left that company and went on to complete college and then went on to, into the rest of the real world for me, I got a check in the mail from them for $4,832.
Which at the time was, like, huge.
Well, it was a lot of money, but right? it was the distribution from the profit sharing plan. And yes, with it, it did state that for that amounts of less than $5,000 in the plan were eligible to simply be distributed in the form of cash. The company's cashier and treasurer simply elected to, rather than giving me the option or going through the process of doing a rollover, just sent me the cash, which is great. But of course, it added the whole amount to my tax return for that particular year.
And more importantly, you have to make sure that you have the cash on hand to pay taxes on that at the end of the year. So,
but, you know, believe it, just show you how old I am. They didn't have that rule back then about about withholding 20%.
Oh, so now often they will withhold it ahead of time for you because they know that there's a good chance you're going to spend it, right?
So, but needless to say, nowadays taking a, especially if it's a substantial amount, taking the lump sum cash payout. And not doing it as a rollover, but doing it as a lump sum payout, usually is a really expensive and ugly choice unless you have a desperate need for the net cash amount you'll end up with after penalties and taxes.
Yeah. So it's not something we advise that you do. We'll put it that way.
Okay. That said, we were talking about the issue of money coming out of these particular plans, that one option that seems to be seemingly appropriate, although not in every case, but seemingly appropriate for most people with a reasonably sized plan. If you've worked for a company for 10 or 15 years, say, you've been contributing to a 403B or a 401K, it could be that obviously we are proponents of at least looking at the option of doing a 401k plan rollover.
Yeah, I always suggest to clients that they either do, well, I should say almost always, suggest to clients that they either do a rollover into an IRA and they can control it themselves, or if they have a great plan at their new employer, the Pension Protection Act allows, Portability Act allows them to move it from one account qualified plan into another one. Very often you can combine it with your new plan so that you have... I like the idea of controlling your money and knowing where it all is and not having to look at several different accounts. I mean, how often do we have people come in and say, oh, I've got this little 401k here, this little one over there, and I forgot about that one. And they're coming in with, you know, six and seven accounts. That's a lot to keep track of. So I always say, you know, if you can consolidate into one IRA or put it into your new company plan, you know, there's no tax issue if you do either of those things. And, you know, you have control over it. You know what's going on.
Another thing that people don't think about and seldom comes up in the conversation is that for each tax-qualified plan you have, each IRA that you have, you may be paying a small fiduciary charge to the IRS, like $35 a year per account. And if you had seven of those, that's going to be $240, $250.
Right.
We've seen that.
It's just silly to have, you know, multiple layers of fees and expenses if you don't have to.
Now, the primary reason a person would consider rolling over their existing or old company's 401k into the new company 401k plan, number one, assumes the department in the new company allows for it.
And most plans do accept rollovers.
No, accept the rollover, number one. Number two, again, look, you'd have to, now this takes a little bit of homework on your part or working with your financial advisor. Look at the new plan. Is it a very low cost plan in terms of its internal expenses? Number two.
If you work for a large company, chances are the answer to that is yes.
The other thing too is look at the selections available in the plan that you have to allocate your portfolio.
Yeah, especially as you get older, because I would say one of the largest areas where I see fault in 401ks comes in the fixed income area, in that they don't offer, many plans do not offer what I would consider to be enough appropriate choices in fixed income to really diversify. And as you get older, closer to retirement, that's obviously more important. So if you're 35, that's probably not a big concern for you. But if you're, you know, maybe you had to transition jobs at age 58 or 60, that's something you should be considering.
Well, also from a broad selection process. Remember, when I started in the business over 30 years ago, a third of all publicly traded companies were outside the U.S., and two-thirds of them were domestically chartered American companies.
That's pretty much inverted.
It's almost the opposite now. 65 to 70% of companies that are publicly traded globally are outside the United States, where 30 to 35% are American chartered companies. If you, but it's not surprising to go into even a fairly good sized 401k plan or 403b plan, look at all out of dozens of choices, you might look at and see maybe only two or three of them actually represent a bona fide international stock fund.
You know, it's when it comes to plan construction, there's a fine line between having enough choices and too many choices, right? I mean, you don't want plan participants to be overwhelmed by the number of fund choices within a plan. But at the same time, there needs to be enough that people can make good decisions to diversify based on their needs. If you don't feel like you have those great choices, I would say look to those target date funds or asset allocation funds within your plan. Sometimes they'll be a moderate allocation, a conservative allocation. Look to those if the individual choices you have aren't, you know, that great.
Now, of the people who have made the lump sum rollover, they're rolling their money over to an IRA rollover account when they leave their long-term company. Some of these people, a surprising number, have made mistakes because they, number one, tried to do it on their own. And I know that sounds self-serving for me to say that, but they tried,
tried to do it on their own.
And there was a behavioral pattern that went into that rollover. We've got about a minute. What is that issue?
So I'll tease you with it here. MetLife did a study on the pot of gold effect. And so when we come back from our break, we can talk about what is the pot of gold effect. It's a behavioral, obviously, thing. And what is the negative of it? What's the downside?
So doing a substantial lump sum rollover can have psychological problems. Mm-hmm. At least that's where the problems fall. Hey, folks, this is Don Sowa with Donna Sowa Allard, and this is the Get Back to Basics Money Talk program. It's halftime, so stick around. We'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we're back with the second half of tonight's Get Back to Basics Money Talk program with Donna Sowa Allard and myself. I'm Don Sowa. Thanks for tuning in to our program. Hope you're having a safe drive home and welcome to AM 790. We were talking a little bit about the 401k plans. Donna offered a little bit of a tease as part of the last program because, in fact, studies have been done of individuals.
Studies
who
are always being done.
Individuals who have made certain choices related to 401k plans. And I can imagine that the various groups, including AARP and a number of consumer advocacy groups, are going to continue looking at the choices that Americans, given their options, the choices they've made, and just how good or bad have those choices turned out. And maybe as a result of that information, they could probably give those people in the future making choices better advice as just by showing, well, here's what happened to some people who did the following.
Well, and, you know, it's always we'd love to learn from other people's mistakes if we could rather than make them ourselves. Right.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
That's always a good thing. So MetLife, which we should disclose, is an insurance company. So it's sometimes, you know, you have to take everything with a grain of salt because sometimes surveys can be self-serving, right?
Well, it was, in fact, their annuity and actuarial department.
They sell annuities, I think it's important to disclose that. However, that doesn't change the numbers.
Yeah, yeah.
It doesn't change the results of the study. So they studied over 1,000 adults last summer, and after that, for about a month, they studied this and came out with their pot of gold study. And what it showed was that about 20% or one-fifth of people who opted to take their 401k or their pension option as a lump sum, about 20% would run through their money in about 5.5 years. So think about that. If you're 65 and you have been given the option to take a lump sum rollover from your pension, or you're retiring and you do a rollover of your 401k, they found that 20% of people who did so would run through that money in about 5.5 years. So come 70 and a half, you would be out of luck. I guess that pot of gold wouldn't be so lucky in that case. But, you know, I'd like to offer this information with a caveat. The pot of gold effect is the idea that you suddenly have this large sum of money that you didn't have before, right? Because you're saving for years and years and years. You're stashing it away. You're not thinking about it.
And you did not have access to it.
You couldn't access it, right? And if you wanted to access it, you had to go through hoops, right? So, and that was on purpose. It should be hard to get it because you need this money for retirement. So you get to retirement and suddenly you make the decision to do this lump sum rollover, and you have hundreds of thousands of dollars now in an IRA. Or maybe it's less. Maybe it's $80,000. I don't know. The number's going to be different for everyone. But suddenly you have this money there. It's available. And no one is telling you how much you need to take out. Unless, of course, you're working with a certified financial planner professional.
The dollar amount that you just received, and when you get that first statement, when you rolled over that money into your IRA rollover, so now in January, when you started, you look down and you say, oh my gosh, I've got $546,000 in here. And you got to remember, there was no single year of you working where you earned anywhere close to $546,000. So that, I guess the term, you use the term pot of gold, which I like as a metaphor, but it's that
like winning the lottery.
Yeah, it's like winning the lottery. It's this chunk of money that you suddenly have, and you suddenly develop a little bit, and this is where it's wrong, a windfall mentality. You're mentally feeling like it's a windfall when it isn't.
It is not your whole life. You saved that money. It took you a long time to save that money diligently. And, you know, how often have you had people kind of come to you and say, you know, I've got this lump of money and this bit of money now, and I'm kind of scared of it. I don't know what to do with it. I don't know how to go about taking it out. And it's something that most people will need help with. Some people are going to be fine and can handle it themselves, but most people will need help turning that into income.
It's funny. I had a colleague who once said, he says, you know, Don, a great many people that we will run into in our lives have the wisdom and perhaps the personal skills, knowledge, to manage their own money. Mm-hmm. But that changes when all of a sudden they're being asked to manage their own wealth. So when money becomes wealth, which means it's big enough and important enough to change your life, then all of a sudden they feel a little less confident about managing it themselves. The point he was making is that he and I will always have the potential for a job.
Well, that's a good thing.
It's a good thing.
And for me too. But yeah, you know, when you're working years, it's just money, right? It's that few hundred dollars going into the plan each pay period.
Now, in this study, Donna, we're just as granted, in fairness to these people, where was some of that money spent? Because that's a lot to spend down your entire rollover in a 5-year period. You know, there had to be some. Granted, it wasn't all frivolously spent.
But I see this all the time. I see people who have retired first and then come in. I can think of one client right now. And they said, "Well, you know, in our first year, I took 2 or 3 vacations." And I said, "Well, that is wonderful, and we're not going to do that next year." And they smiled and said,
"You've
I know
had your vacation."
I said, "I know, I get it."
Bought a brand new Lincoln Town Car.
You feel like you have the ability to make purchases you couldn't make before. And I said, you know, let's not beat ourselves up over it, even though you probably spent twice last year what you should have. That's okay. It's done. Now moving forward, we're going to make smart decisions because we need to make this money last. So for some people, it's, you know, a vacation. Other people say this is the first time they have, you know, the ability to kind of pay down some debt. Maybe you were looking at some credit card debt and say, "Oh, I'm gonna pay this." So they'll take out a lump sum to pay that off. Now we see a lot of people using money for education, their kids' education, right? We see a lot of people paying off their kids' student loans or putting it towards, college bills, and other people are using for, you know, medical bill purposes. There's a million ways that you're, you know, there's a million strings pulling at your money.
Well, you know, it was funny, though, the psychology, until it's presented a certain way, and it's not our place as advisors to be critical, but it is our place to ask interesting questions. So I would say, I had one case where the person says, well, I went out and bought a new car. I said, okay, well, what did you buy? And they said, well, I bought a Lincoln Town car. This is years ago when they were still making those, right? Lincoln Town car. I said, oh, that's a nice car. Now, let me ask you a question. Before your Lincoln Town car, what was the most expensive car you've ever owned in your life? I mean, just thinking back, even when you were younger, what was the most expensive car you ever owned, or one that you bought that was brand new or pretty new? He goes, well, the newest car I ever had prior to that was I bought an 18-month-old Lincoln, 18-month-old Honda Accord, and it had 30,000 miles on it. I said, well, that was a good buy, wasn't it? And how much did that cost at the time? He said, it was about 20 grand. And I said, okay, that was a good price. In the town car? And he says, well, that's like, it's over 50. I said, well, I also personally had for a great many years a Lincoln Town, a Honda Accord in mm-hmm. a Lincoln Town car. And from my experience, the radio worked about the same. Mm-hmm. It was both of them were transportation where I needed to go. Interestingly enough, I had the leather seats in both of them. So I had the leather package. I had the high-end package for the Honda Accord, and I thought it was a great little car. And yes, it was easier to park than the Lincoln.
wasn't a boat.
It also got probably 12 miles a gallon more. I said, so
the Lincoln was an emotional decision.
And that's perfectly fine. If you feel better about yourself today because you're driving in a Lincoln than you did before, then that's okay. But the Honda Accord was perfectly fine. I think you might have felt pretty good if you went out and bought yourself a brand new Honda Accord too. But now you have about $30,000 less that you could use for other purposes. So here's where the real problem is. The money that you're represented in your rollover lump sum from your 401k plan, that money was replacing your job. Your job was a money machine. It created a monthly or biweekly check for you. It supported your lifestyle and helped you meet your obligations, and it helped you save.
Well, I mean, it's really simple if you just pose the question to someone and say, why were you saving money? Were you saving it so you could retire and suddenly buy something? No, you were saving it so you could retire and pay for your life.
Because this also, another thing that happens at this unique time is that your job goes away. You will no longer be receiving that paycheck. You will have limited ability to continue saving money unless you choose to work again in another capacity. And this big chunk of money that you have the ability to roll over, the only reason you would have rolled it over and that was the choice you made would have been if you had an overbearing need or desire or reason to control the money. And controlling it because you believed you could invest it more efficiently and better than by either rolling it into another 401k plan with a new company if you're continuing to work, or simply annuitizing it, and instead of taking a lump sum, turning it into another paycheck, which you would start getting immediately. There's lots of reasons to do that. Now, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back from this break, we're going to explain why, as much as I like the annuity option for a great many retirees, there are some reasons why you might not want to do that. And we'll discuss that when we come back, closing out tonight's Money Talk, Get Back to Basics program.
This is Money Talk with Dawn Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we're back with the Money Talk program now. As when it comes to financial planning, especially related to retirement, one of the great, if you were to pick one emotion that is of greatest importance to a great many of the people who are now eligible to retire, I think maybe, depending on your age and a few other factors, the word safety or the desire for it would be a big deal. But the real emotion is control. The best laid plans, the best designed retirement plan is the one that gives you the greatest level of control. And what I mean by that is it allows you to make your own decisions and you don't have them dictated to you by either someone else or by your circumstances. Now, I liked the idea that with part of your money, if a person has the good fortune of one of those rare defined benefit pensions now, where they say, okay, when I turn 62, 63, I'm going to have, you know, this much money. I'll get a check for $3,850 a month or for $4,000 a month for the rest of my life.
That's like an annuity.
It's a dependable source of income. Financial advisors like Donna and I, we love to hear about, you know, those clients who have those dependable sources. Social Security does fall into that category, mm-hmm. and it will for a while, I'm sure, as it changes. But anything where there's going to be a regular check coming in. And the first thing we try to do is to say, is there sufficient income coming in from dependable sources to cover what we know to be the retiree's fixed expenses in retirement? Now, if the answer is yes, well, then any savings that you have, you've accumulated in your defined contribution plans, personal savings like a joint account, IRAs you might have set up on your own, whether they are Roth or traditional, whatever that is, those assets can now be used strategically to create income and continued growth at some appropriate level. But that income can now be used to supplement and cover your discretionary expenses, the things that you choose to spend money on.
When I do a financial plan, it's goals-based. We say, what are your goals for spending in retirement? And I always break them down based on need. So you have your fixed expenses. Those are a 10. You absolutely have to pay for these things. They are needs. And then the things that maybe aren't true needs, but they're really, really high on the list of wants, those might be assigned a goal number of like a 7 or so. And we always say, you know, the likelihood of meeting all of your goals. And we know the amount for the fixed, absolutely non-discretionary expenses, and then the discretionary expenses. If you have, you know, some annuity income or some pension income, it's always great if you can look at it and say, I will meet those fixed expenses through, you know, dependable income sources. And then maybe the rest are met through, you know, money that you have more control over, which would be like that lump sum rollover, you know, IRA money. It's nice to be able to know that you've got a safety net through dependable sources of income, as you say, and then you can supplement it with, you know, money that you have more discretion over.
So you do a really thoughtful budget, and that's going to include first your fixed expenses and then second your discretionary expenses, which, by the way, is going to include something people very seldom think about unless it's brought to their attention. That's benevolence. You know, kindness to family, friends, gifts, special occasions.
That is one of the areas that people, I would say, underreport most. When I go through and say, what do you really spend at the holidays? You know, bar mitzvahs, birthdays, all those things, first communions. What do you really spend? People are often shocked by the amount they spend.
Well, even benevolent giving, whether it's the church or the temple or the schools that you support or or organizations that you support. I mean, there's a lot of it that goes out that you don't think about it. And like you said, the most common thing is gifting to family and friends, yeah. and people you care about. I mean, how many weddings do we have in the last in 1 year, Donna?
And, you know, they always go recently. In like cycles, right? You always go through like, you know, groups in the family who were born around the same time.
Oh, and by the way, it's not just a wedding gift, there's a shower gift.
No, they're all getting married, and then a few years later, they all start having kids. You know,
yeah, it's just great. It's terrific. But the point is, regardless of how you look at it, the good financial planning process, especially as it deals with retirement planning and other types of goal setting, looks at this issue of fixed expenses, discretionary expenses. And then when you're dealing with discretionary spending, if you could say take that money that you did roll over, that you do have control over in the IRA, the 401k rollover plan, or whatever it is you have, and then say invest it to get 4.5% or 5% return on it. You're not getting greedy, but you're trying to be stable and consistent. Mm-hmm. And then budget yourself in a way that you say, you know, my discretionary spending I can meet by drawing out, say, 3% of that 4.5% that I've earned or that 5% I earned as an investor. Take 3% of that. Put that into my budget and use that for those discretionary expenses. Now, that means that the money machine that you now have helping to create income, the one that's the rollover, mm-hmm. Not only are you meeting the obligation to take money out of it, for example, when you get to 7.5, but in the meantime, it's allowing you flexibility to deal with the fact that some of even your fixed expenses are going to go up because of the cost of living.
They absolutely will.
And some of your discretionary desires may change as you change and get older. As your family grows and you now got grandkids, as I know, yes, we spend more money. Probably, I think we spend more money on the grandkids than we ever did on my children. maybe not. Who knows? I'm sure my wife would correct me on that.
I'd say that's not true at this point. But it might be.
Well, when I'm thinking about education yet or anything yet. But with all of that, then you also have that 1.5% that I'm not spending. I'm spending 3 of the 4.5% maybe. That 1.5% just grows. and it's the principal continuing to grow, and that is a control element. It gives you the ability to change as life will change.
And, you know, if the market isn't doing so well one year, you can adjust your withdrawals based on it, right?
But a large number, this is another reason why I'm not as enamored of, especially for someone putting all of their money into the annuity, the defined benefit pension, or the immediate annuity. And that is the fact that most annuities, I know you were mentioning during the break that some annuities actually have components to them that allow for some minor cost of living adjustments. But the vast majority of immediate annuities will pay you out an amount initially, and it may be an impressive number to start. But as time goes on, 10 years down the road, guess what? You've lost a third of the purchasing power of many of those portfolios.
So you supplement that with your other money that's invested.
And you have to adjust. So we recommend if you're going to go and you need the dependable income and you want that immediate annuity that's part of a pension-type plan, pension choice, go ahead and do it as long as you are leaving some money aside to accommodate the need for ongoing changing income needs and your personal growth. And that includes the cost of living. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's a strategic planning. There's so much of it. We could talk about it for weeks, and we probably do here on the Money Talk program. But I think on one of the future programs, we're going to discuss, you know, we talked about taking money out of plans now once you retire. Mm-hmm. Well, what about your ability and the wisdom or lack thereof of taking money out of 401ks and 403bs before you retire while you're still working? That can be done correctly, or it can be done very badly and very costly. So we'll allow for some of that as a Get Back to Basics topic for a future program. In the meantime, we want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening to tonight's program here on AM 790. I'm Don Sowa with my partner and colleague, Donna Sowa Allard, thanking all of you for tuning in, saying drive safely, and in the meantime, have a wonderful, wonderful evening.